I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
It's a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, and with me, my co-host and producer, Mr. Tim Dennis. Good evening, Tim.
Good evening, sir.
We are now going to delve into the world of cryptozoology with our next guest. Our next guest is Nick Redfern, and he is an author, and his new book is called There's Something in the Woods. Covers a little bit of everything from Bigfoot to Mothman, werewolves, chupacabras, and more. And Nick Redfern also comes to us from Texas. Let's welcome to the show Mr. Nick Redfern. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Doing great. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate you chiming in. It's been a busy couple of weeks in the world of cryptozoology.
Yeah.
Now, can you explain to our listeners that are maybe new to this, what is exactly cryptozoology?
Yeah, cryptozoology, excuse me, Dave, in simple terms, is basically the study and the investigation of weird creatures, and that could be anything from Bigfoot to the Loch Ness Monster, the Abominable Snowman, the Chupacabras, as you mentioned. But it can also include so-called out-of-place animals where, for example, you know, someone will see a big cat roaming down the road of the town they live in, or somebody sees, you know, a kangaroo that's escaped or something like that. So it can kind of cover all sorts of different areas, but broadly speaking, it's a study of mysterious animals. You know, those creatures that science tells us doesn't exist, but the witnesses tell us do exist.
So. Well, Nick, and I mentioned you're in Texas, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that is definitely not a Dallas accent, I hear. Where are you from originally, Nick?
No, that's not a Dallas accent. I'm actually from England, but my wife's from Texas. She's originally from Beaumont. And we spent some time living in England and then moved back to this area about 2 years ago.
Now, what can you tell me, what got you involved in this part of the field?
Well, what actually happened was that when I was about 5 years old, my parents took me on holiday for a week to Scotland, and we spent a day at Loch Ness. And my father related this story to me about how, you know, there was this monster or this still surviving dinosaur living in Loch Ness. And I guess even as a five-year-old kid, I wasn't sort of old enough to appreciate the whole intricacies of the story. But, you know, when your imagination gets a grip on you at that age, I was still old enough to think, wow, you know, there's a monster living in Loch Ness. And I guess that really sort of got my interest and intrigue going. And, you know, I'd read books on things like the Loch Ness Monster when I was like 7 or 8 years old, and it sort of really captured my attention, this whole idea that, you know, in the woods and the lakes and the forest, there could be creatures lurking in there and out there that we really don't know a great deal about. And so that really got my attention and interest and set me off on this trek, I guess.
So have you actually gone out since then and investigated Loch Ness yourself?
Oh, yes, I've done a lot of on-site investigations. I've probably been to Loch Ness now about five times, I think, over about the last 20 years. And Loch Ness is kind of a weird place because it's a very atmospheric place. It's a very large loch. It's 23 miles long, a mile wide, and roughly about 800 feet deep. And the water's literally pitch black in colour due to the large quantity of peat in Loch Ness. And it's surrounded by these large hills and forests, and it has this old ruined castle on the shores of the loch. So it looks very sort of spooky and atmospheric. And
now, the loch, though, itself was a man-made loch, right?
No, it actually wasn't. What happened was that it used to be open to the sea, but when there was the last ice age, it became landlocked. And so one of the theories about the Loch Ness Monster is the idea that maybe if it's a flesh and blood animal, that it could make, at one point at least, make its way or their way from the sea into the loch. And then when it became, when the ice spread and the the access to the ocean became closed, that it then became landlocked, if you like, and was forced to remain in the loch. So, a lot of theories, but that's sort of one of the main ones that proponents of, things like the plesiosaur theory tend to subscribe to.
With all the research that you've done over the last 20 years, have you ever seen something that you believe fit the bill of the Loch Ness Monster in the five sightings?
Well,
five times
I have to say that I haven't, but again, that's not surprising. I mean, one of the things I think it's important to mention about Loch Ness is that the fact that we don't have a body and the fact that sightings aren't that common strongly suggests that, again, if this is a flesh and blood animal of some type, it almost certainly derives its oxygen from the water like a fish. Now, there are a few reports of the creature having been seen on the very edge of the shore, but for the most part, the sightings have been reported in the water, and yet they're not that common, and although Loch Ness is a very, very busy body of water, so that does tend to suggest that the creature only surfaces out of the water or puts its head out of the water, I guess out of curiosity, in simple terms, and it's probably some sort of a water-breathing creature. So in that respect, I think, that's probably one of the reasons why people such as myself who look for these things haven't seen them, purely because the chances of being in the right place in a 22-mile-long loch at the right time of the year just to see one of these things surfacing is pretty much, it's sort of stretching credibility to be in the right place at the right time, on the right day, in the same stretch of 23-mile-long water. So.
Now, I'm sure you've kept up with all the research that's been done on Loch Ness as well. And, one of the most popular sightings are the three humps, or the humps that seem to move through the water. And now that we've got the high-definition cameras, they've actually been able to break down that footage and see a lot of these humps that seem to be appearing are actually just the roll of the waves through the loch.
Yeah, there's a lot of controversy about, what people see in Loch Ness or what they don't see. And you're quite correct, Dave, that when you're on Loch Ness, you need to be aware of the fact that, for example, waves and wakes from boats can actually create a lot of imagery that does look weird. Now, there's no doubt that in some cases people have, misidentified waves and wakes from boats and speedboats, that sort of thing, and thought it is, a classic couple of humps. But there are other reports that seem more substantial in terms of where it does look like, the people are describing some sort of body that's undulating in the water. Now, if that is the case, the big question is what are they? As I mentioned earlier, you've got the plesiosaur theory, which is certainly the most popular one. At least as far as the media is concerned, it's actually kind of surprising that if you ask people in the mainstream cryptozoological community, particularly in England, a lot of them tend to subscribe to the idea that these creatures could actually be very, very large types of eel rather than anything, that's like a hangover from the prehistoric age.
Right, and they've actually found half-eaten eel carcass, correct, on the sides of the shore that are pretty large, and they figure that if this is the case?
There have been reports, a lot of reports of people seeing creatures that seem more to fit the idea of an eel. Now, I'm sure the Scottish Tourist Board would love it to be a plesiosaur.
Right.
And, some sort of dinosaur. But at the end of the day, studies have been done, for example, on the fish population of the loch. And the idea that a colony of plesiosaurs, and there'd have to be quite a lot of them to have a sustainable colony, you know, and to avoid all the problems with inbreeding, etc., and then to find that, you know, there actually isn't really that large a fish colony in Loch Ness for them to survive on, then that kind of puts that theory a little bit out of the window. The eel one, I think, is far more likely in terms of explaining what these creatures might be, if indeed, you know, as I said, they are flesh and blood animals. But, you know, in saying that, you know, if you come face to face with a 30-foot eel, that's certainly by definition a monster.
No doubt.
You know, I think when people talk about monsters and things like that, there's this imagery that there's something that science always doesn't know about, and by definition something monstrous. Sometimes I think they just turn out to be either mutated or very large forms of creatures that science has identified. But, you know, in terms of Loch Ness, we just haven't captured the body yet. So.
Well, speaking of that, and I'd like to take a break here, mm-hmm. and then we'll come back. And I want to talk about recapturing a body, since the news broke about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks, where a couple of gentlemen from Georgia claimed to have recovered the body of a Bigfoot. And they had put out press releases and actually met with Fox News to break this news, and they wanted to have it set up. They had photographs of this Bigfoot in a freezer that had what appeared to be like entrails hanging out of it from a gunshot wound. We want to talk a little bit more about that and some of the stuff that's been going on in the field when we come back. So please stay tuned. And this is the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show.
That's all this was a big joke. It got into something way bigger than what it was supposed to be.
Matt Whitten and Rick Dyer say when they concocted their Bigfoot hoax, they had no idea Bigfoot would get legs like it did.
It started off as just some YouTube videos and a website.
It got legs and ran. It's got crazy now.
We're all about having fun.
I did not find it funny.
Chief Jeff Turner says he's not laughing and has fired Whitten from the Clayton County Police Department.
He lied on national TV. So that defense attorney now can say, so how do we know you're not lying now?
I don't believe it does affect my credibility at all, because this is Bigfoot. It would be one thing if I came out and said that I had something else that is tangible or real. But right now, as far as I'm concerned, there is no real Bigfoot.
Whitten and Dyer say Bigfoot was a Sasquatch costume they bought off the web and filled with possum roadkill and slaughterhouse leftovers.
We never intended on it to go this far.
Prominent defense lawyer Steve Lister says Dyer and Whitten have committed no crime, but they've retained him.
There has been some threats made to them for both civil and criminal prosecution.
Did you start thinking, whoops, I'm lying, this isn't just a joke?
Well, we told 10 different stories. Everyone knew that we were lying.
Well, everybody didn't know that they were lying at first. Of course, we're talking about the medical leave. Mr. Whitten, who was on medical leave from the police force, along with his buddy, decided to try to fraud the public by doing a Bigfoot sighting. They said that they had the body, and they actually had it in a freezer. They froze it solid. They made some arrangements with people and I guess took some money up front so that the people could have the body. They melted the ice down, and upon review, it was nothing but a Bigfoot costume filled with dead possums and entrails. Now, Nick, what was your thoughts when the story first broke?
Well, you know, when it first broke, I would say the best way, or the most correct way to word it, is probably that I was intrigued by it, you know, because they were very, very, you know, confident in their view that, yes, we've got a Bigfoot. And, you know, I surfed the net and went to some of the, you know, the leading crypto sites, and there was a lot of intrigue, there was a lot of interest, a huge amount of debate and comments being posted at blogs, etc. And, you know, some people were saying, well, maybe now this, you know, we really do have the evidence. So I think the best way is, so I was quietly and carefully intrigued, and, you know, I wasn't certainly jumping up and down, because I think, you know, in all these types of cases, it kind of pays to kind of err on the side of caution. But I was quietly interested and, you know, excited in some respect to see how it developed.
Now, from the first photos that they leaked online, was there any alarms going off for you that this just looked...
Well, you know, there was, when this whole issue came out about the similarities between the way the head looked and this one particular Bigfoot costume/head that you could buy online. And when I compared the two, that was really, I think, for me at least, when the alarm bell started ringing, that, hey, you know, this actually looks pretty close to this thing that anyone, you know, with a few dollars could go out and buy. And so in that respect, that for me, I think, more than anything else, was the big red flag. Now, you know, as time went on and then we had the press conference and they said, well, you know, we're going to invite Fox News down. And, you know, that to me didn't actually sound like the work of a hoaxer. The idea that if you hoax something, you know, you've got to be pretty confident to invite Fox News on live TV to come down and examine the body or at least film the body. So it was kind of like one of these weird, puzzling things where on the one hand, some parts it seemed fake, and other parts you think, wow, you know, why would they invite Fox News down if they've just faked it all? So, you know, I think that got me kind of puzzled as well. But, you know, then in the last couple of days before it all fell apart, I think pretty much everybody in the field who was following the subject realized that, hey, you know, this story is on its last legs. And I think from my perspective, the saddest part of all is the fact or the issue of how this is going to affect and reflect upon mainstream Bigfoot research today. Now, of course, you know, every news station you can conceivably think of pretty much followed this story in some respect. And, you know, I just know that the next time that there's a Bigfoot sighting and it makes its way onto one of the mainstream news channels, that the relevant person who's doing the interview is going to say, well, how can we take this news sighting seriously when the biggest thing in the Bigfoot world in the last few years, that turned out to be a hoax. So why shouldn't this one turn out to be a hoax? And I think that is the attitude that unfortunately is going to affect much of the subject, kind of like as a roll-on from this this hoax event.
Yeah, that's what my fear was, is that this is going to set back the field of cryptozoology and the investigating quite a bit, because it does look bad for the field to have goofballs out there running around, especially, I guess these guys charge upwards of $1,000 to take you on Bigfoot hunts.
Well, you know, I mean, it wouldn't have been so bad. Well, I mean, it would have been bad anyway, but it wouldn't have been so bad if it hadn't reached the mainstream media. I mean, you know, coming from England, I always check what's going on back in England every day, you know, to see what's going on in my own country. And it made the mainstream newspapers. They gave it a huge amount of coverage all around the world. Now, had it just been something that was concocted in one area and it was stamped on and put down before it, you know, got on a worldwide scale, that wouldn't have been as disastrous. But the fact that the entire world's media pretty much picked up on it, I think Bigfoot research is... I don't think the research itself is going to take a long time to recover, but I think in the eyes of the media and the public, it's going to take a long time to recover.
You know what I'd like to talk, Nick, while we have him in the studio, we have our international correspondent who is from England as well, and he's visiting us live in the studio. And one of the other news stories that he had pulled aside for us is about this Yeti hair, and our international correspondent is Adrian Lee. Adrian, welcome back into the show.
Hi, Dave.
And let's go ahead and tell us a little bit about this story, Adrian, and then Nick will have you reflect on this and see if you're familiar with this as well.
Sure. I'm sure if Nick's been reading the newspapers and being online on the BBC, he'd have picked this story up. There was an interesting Yeti story. The Primatology Department of Oxford Brookes University in England are in the process of currently studying hairs that were brought back from a remote northern part of India, believed to belong to a Yeti. The hairs were handed in to a BBC reporter called Alistair Lawson while he was reporting in the West Karo Hills in northeast India. And this is an area that's very hot, very dense in jungle. One of the locals said he saw the Yeti and afterwards gathered some hair from the area that he saw the creature actually walking around in. So he actually picked the hair up from the twigs and the branches that the creature caught himself on. The local then gave it to the British reporter because he claimed the Indian bureaucracy, it would have taken too long to have got them tested, and he wanted to get them back to Britain so they could actually be verified and tested. So he handed these over to the reporter. The scientists have compared the hairs with a database of hairs from other creatures indigenous to that region supplied by the Natural History Museum without finding any matches currently. Apparently they agree there is every chance they could belong to an unknown species of primate. It was apparently only 2 years ago that a new species of macaque was discovered in northern India, so there could be a distinct possibility of actually discovering a new species. Reports are common in this area of India of a black and grey ape-like animal, which stands about 3 meters tall, which is nearly 10 foot. And this discovery may actually provide compelling evidence of this. The locals call this creature Mandburung, or forest man. They say he weighs in around 660 pounds and is herbivorous, surviving on fruits, roots, and tree bark. It is also worth pointing out that not too long ago, a huge species of ape known as Gigantopithecus roamed this particular area, but there have never been any fossil remains found, and it was only identified in the 1920s after scientists discovered teeth in a Chinese medicine shop that were labelled as dragon's teeth. They took them, brought them back to Britain, and actually analysed them, and then discovered this new species of ape that was expected to stand 3 metres tall and weigh 660 pounds. So there is a distinct possibility that it could actually still be living in that area.
Now, Nick, too, with this gigantic Pithecus has been thrown around for a while as a possible forerunner to Bigfoot. And they've actually found pieces of skull as well, I thought. Well, but they've only found two chunks of remains from this, correct?
Yeah, it's primarily teeth, Dave, that have been analysed. And, I mean, Adrian's comments, you know, I think they're very intriguing, the idea that possibly Gigantopithecus could be still surviving, you know, in some of these areas. And, I mean, certainly a lot of researchers posit that Gigantopithecus is the, you know, the most likely or viable explanation for some of these large...
But isn't it silly, if you've only got the remains from what you believe is one or two of these things, to call it its own race, couldn't it just be a... You know, I mean, we have people in the United States, like the elephant man. Well, I mean, not in the United States, but, you know, there are these mutations that occur.
Yeah,
that I mean, couldn't have just been a gorilla that mutated very strangely, and that's what the body remains were?
Well, you know, I mean, it is one of these things where, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of remains of Gigantopithecus to try and really make, you know, a full determination. But there has been a lot of research done, and... Yeah, the general, I think the hypothesis is, for the most part, that it was such a massive creature that it was possibly, as they call it, like a knuckle walker, like, you know, a mountain gorilla, rather than something like the classic Bigfoot that seems to walk more on two legs. Now, you know, the general scientific understanding of the situation is that Gigantopithecus became extinct about 500,000 years ago. Now, of course, that does allow for, I guess, certain developments in terms of the evolutionary process that might, you know, make it look a little bit different from then to today. And, you know, the creature's adapted to its habitat, which might account for some changes. But, you know, I do think it's very intriguing that, you know, as Adrian points out, we have these reports of these creatures having been seen in particular areas today, where, broadly speaking, we know that Gigantopithecus did roam at some point thousands and thousands of years ago. I think that in itself is something that shouldn't be ignored.
Now, Adrian, you also had in the story one of the wrap-up points. You're saying that Sir Edmund Hillary, when he was climbing Everest, also found hair.
Absolutely. I believe that he actually went back in 1961 to 62 to actually look for the Yeti. And he went on an extensive tour of the area, but I believe he didn't actually find anything. But lots of locals did give him hair and to analyze and bring back. And I think they are comparing those at the moment with the things that he brought back.
Was that hair ever identified, do you know?
I know that they dismissed a lot of the things they brought back as being a really rare blue bear that was local to the area. But the interesting thing for me from the story is that the hairs that have been given to Oxford Brookes University actually have follicles on them. So I believe they're actually looking at the DNA as well. So they've actually got quite a lot to go on there.
Very good. Well, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with more Darkness on the Edge of Town with our guest, Nick Redfern. Stay tuned.
They're hardly beautiful and barely average. In fact, when they were both born, the doctor slapped their moms instead of them.
I will slap you so hard you end up in the Ming Dynasty.
Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town with Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis.
Once again tonight, reports of a chupacabra sighting in Texas. Last year, DNA testing of a strange corpse found at a ranch showed it was just a mangy fox. But tonight, sheriff's deputies in South Texas say they caught a strange creature on video. Chris Sadeghi has the story.
For 8 years, Corporal Brandon Riedel has been patrolling DeWitt County. On Friday, though, he was involved in a different kind of chase.
What crazy is that?
Hot on the tail of what just might be a chupacabra. The animal captured the attention of everyone around here last year after one was caught, and now this video.
You know, I've been patrolling these back roads for a long time, and I've never run across anything like this until that day.
With a passing glance, it may just look like a dog or coyote, but if you know the legend, you're going to look a little harder, and if you have a camera, hit record.
I'm seeing it, but I don't believe it. It's in the daytime.
And you could tell that the front legs were shorter than the back legs, and the way it's running, it doesn't run like a normal coyote or dog would.
Let's slow it down a little. Look when it turns its head and see that long snout. That's the type of feature that legends are made of.
But when I saw from the side, I was like, that's exactly what we've been seeing in the papers, what we've seen on the T-shirts.
The creature ran off and has not been caught, so the sighting is only going to feed the, well, the beast. But Sheriff Joseph Askey says it's nice to have a hometown star.
I love this for DeWitt County. It has brought a lot of attention to us, and I believe there's something to it.
A mystery that everyone loves chasing. Chris Sadeghi, KVU News, Nightbeat.
Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. That was a news clip, and our news bits that we've been picking up are from CNN and Fox. And Nick, we were just listening to the Chupacabra newscast that took place a couple weeks back when the state trooper out in Texas was driving on a dirt road and caught what he believed to be a chupacabra in the middle of the road. He flipped on his camera, and he was able to actually go out there and follow this thing for a little bit. What do you think? Have you actually had a chance to watch the video on that?
Yeah, I have. I mean, the first thing I would say, Dave, is I've actually made several expeditions to Puerto Rico looking for the original Chupacabras. And so, you know, I'm sort of very well-versed with the story and what the witnesses to the original accounts on Puerto Rico were talking about. Now, if you look at the creature that's been, or the creatures that have been either found, either filmed or found dead or killed in Texas, I don't think there's any doubt that they are canine, they're canid in origin. Your DNA tests have been done, and various reports have come back as well. You know, it looks, it's either some sort of dog, or it's like a coyote, or is it a coyote-wolf cross, which appears to have like mange or some sort of skin disease. Now, what I would say is that I do think that the so-called Texas Chupacabras, that they are canid animals, there's no doubt about that. But as the one police officer said in the recording, and as other researchers have pointed out, there seems to be certain attributes relative to these creatures that seem to at least take them apart from just strictly the idea that they're coyotes, where they've lost all their hair. For example, you know, there is this issue of the differences in the length of the legs, front legs versus the back legs. And, you know, they have this, particularly this new footage, this very, very long snout, which, you know, does look very, very strange. You know, it looks a lot longer than a normal dog. And some of the reports of the teeth seem to suggest the teeth are far more elongated than you would find in a normal animal. So I don't think it's as simplistic as we're looking at a dog or a wild coyote or something like that just lost its hair and it looks weird. I think there seem to be other things going on at the same time. Now, having said all that, however, I don't think that the creatures that people are seeing in Texas are one and the same as has been reported in Puerto Rico. I think what's happened is that the original Chupacabras reports in Puerto Rico, you know, the legend that has kind of cropped up is that this creature drains blood, it bites animals on the neck.
And Chupacabra stands for, isn't it, goat sucker? Or goat
sucker, right. Yeah. The reason being that the original attacks in Puerto Rico primarily were on goats, and farmers and ranchers would report the classic, almost like a vampire-like, two puncture marks on the neck, bodies drained of blood, or at least a lot of the blood missing. But in many cases, the bodies wouldn't be eaten. It would just be a case that they would be, you know, not even torn apart, but just thrown around with these classic two puncture marks when the bodies were examined. And I think that's one of the reasons why the Texas reports gained, I guess, sort of an angle that they were related to the Chupacabras, because in many of the reports where people, ranchers in Texas said their animals had been attacked, they weren't eaten, they weren't devoured, you know, as a wild animal might devour them. They were literally just, you know, grabbed by the neck and killed, and then the bodies were left on the ground. And I think that kind of stood out. And, you know, people began to wonder, well, is this the Chupacabras? Now, as I said, I've made several trips to Puerto Rico looking for the chupacabras, which collectively probably amount to about a month's time spent on the island in total. Now, most of the people who reported the chupacabras in Puerto Rico have described a bipedal creature, a two-legged creature, whereas whatever these creatures are in Texas, however you want to interpret them, there's no doubt they're on running around on four legs.
Right. Do you think that chupacabras kind of become a catch-all? I don't know if you caught the special on Animal Planet with Jeff Corwin about a year or two ago, where he went looking for the Yeti, and it seemed whatever the villagers could not identify, you know, he would show them photographs of snow leopards. They'd say, that's the Yeti. They'd show them sloth bears. That's the Yeti. They'd show them a tree off in the distance. That's the Yeti. It was whatever they couldn't determine. They just automatically used the Yeti as a catch-all. Do you think chupacabras falling the same way?
Yeah, I think that's actually a very good point, Dave. I think there's no doubt that, particularly on the island of Puerto Rico, because it's a relatively small place, it's an enclosed, you know, an island environment, and rumors and legends and tales soon spread. And I think you're quite right that what happens is that, you know, every time somebody's animals get killed, because, you know, the media have made such a play of this chupacabra angle on Puerto Rico, that people think it must be the chupacabras. Now, you know, there's absolutely no doubt, as I found out when, basically going around Puerto Rico, I found out, you know, there's a lot of packs of wild dogs roaming the streets, you know, that kind of create this image of almost like a 1950s New York street gang kind of thing, you know, where you wouldn't want to take them on. And that is actually the image you get. There's a lot of packs of wild dogs you'll see when the sun starts to set in Puerto Rico around the little towns and villages, and they come out, and there's a lot of vicious ones. There's no doubt about that. So, you know, I think some attacks could be attributed to something like that. However, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that there is some sort of weird creature on Puerto Rico. I mean, on the various times I've been to Puerto Rico, each occasion I've interviewed villages, townsfolk, farmers, people from the Civil Defense Unit, all with their own stories to relate. One woman in particular, a lady named Norca, who I interviewed at length in 2004, she told me how she'd seen this very weird creature, which she described as having like a monkey-like body and face, but a pair of like bat-like wings, like membrane-type wings that you would see on a bat rather than a bird. And the description that she gave was very much like a huge, monstrous bat, which was literally, she said, almost like sitting in the middle of the road, and she had to literally slow her car down and wait for it to move. Now, you know, when you speak to somebody like that who comes across very, very credible, isn't asking for any payments, you know, is just interested to try and find out if someone can answer for her, you know, what was this weird creature she saw years before. She came across very, very credible. I also interviewed a farmer named Noel, and he was a chicken farmer, and he had about 20 or 30 of his animals killed in very weird circumstances, where, again, they'd been literally drained of blood. They were actually examined by a veterinarian. But the weird thing was that these chickens were kept in separate cages, and whatever had killed them had actually been able to work out how to open the fairly complex locks on the cages. The cages weren't torn apart, and yet the farmer didn't hear any strange noises in the night, no screaming from the chickens or anything like that. He just woke in the morning to find all these chickens dead with two puncture marks and drained of blood. So I'm convinced that there's something going on Puerto Rico that is killing these animals, and there's quite clearly something going on in Texas with these weird-looking dog-type creatures, but I'm not convinced that they're one and the same. I do think the chupacabras has become like a cultural phenomenon where when animal attacks take place, inevitably it creates this idea that, oh, it must be the chupacabras.
You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Our guest is Mr. Nick Redfern. You can check out Nick's website at nickredfern.com. He has a brand new book called There's Something in the Woods. It covers everything from Bigfoot, Mothman, werewolves, chupacabras. And those are available everywhere right now, all top booksellers, correct, in Amazon?
Yeah, excuse me, that's right, Dave. If people go to the website, they'll see thumbnail images of all the books, and they will just take them to Amazon or just go into your local bookshop if you want the exercise rather than just doing it through the internet. So.
Great. Well, why don't we take a quick break here? You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town. We'll be back.
Now from the deep, or is it? A creature washing ashore on the eastern seaboard, and since a picture of this Montauk monster was posted online, it has received 60,000 hits. Said to have been found on the eastern end of Long Island near the town of Montauk, and that photo is sparking debate over just what this beast might be. There's a rumor out there that this might just be a publicity stunt to set up a show on the Cartoon Network. Cryptids Are Real is the name of this show out there, by the way. And there's been some, a suggestion, let's say, that this was all a PR stunt set to drive some folks to that show.
You know, that brings up an interesting fact. Cartoon Network, about a year ago, I think it was about a year or so, right, Tim? They got busted for putting those light-up things underneath bridges that people thought were bombs. And I guess, and Nick, maybe you could chime in on this. It turns out that one of the people that turned in the photograph of this Montauk monster happens to be involved with this Cartoon Network show. Is that what you heard as well?
You know, I hadn't heard that aspect of the story. I mean, as far as the body's concerned, I certainly don't think it's a fake body. I don't think it's, you know, like some rubber special effect thing or something like that. What I do think is that almost certainly it is a badly decayed conventional animal, possibly something like a dog. Now, I think the thing I would say more than anything else, were it not for the case that it seems to have this kind of beak-like nose, I actually don't think any interest would really have been applied to it. You know, I think it is this aspect more than any other that has made people think, wow, that's not a normal-looking animal.
Right.
Now, my personal view, you know, if you look at a lot of the stories that surface, people said, oh, it looks like a griffin or something like that, you know, like a classic mythological creature, which actually does. However, I think, you know, we need to address the fact that if the creature started to decay, what you could actually be looking at, you know, is the sort of the nasal area of the creature or the animal or dog or whatever it is without skin on, but with skin in other parts. So it looks odd. And, you know, I'll be the first to admit, it does kind of have this sort of griffin beak-like appearance to it. And I think, as I said, had it not got that, I really don't think any attention would have been paid to it. I do think the body looks very dog-like, really.
Well, Fox News earlier this week also had, or a week or so back, had animal expert Jeff Corwin chime in on this. And Tim, do we have a little bit of audio on that as well? Let's go ahead and play that audio.
Yesterday I was at a Red Sox game, and I got a call that this monster washed up, and I just raced to the computer to check it out, and frankly I was as disappointed with this picture as I was with the score of that baseball game.
Why was that, Jeff?
You know, this is your classic example of a decomposing carnivore, a mammal that eats other animals. And if you look at that picture, if you can pull that picture up again, you know, I've heard everything. It has a beak. It's like a dragon. First of all, we get no, you know, size or scale perspective.
That's a good point.
But my guess is probably about 2 feet in length. But you know what they say it has a beak in the front? If you look very closely at that, what you think is a beak is actually the canine teeth. There's a canine teeth on top. There's a canine teeth on the bottom. If you look around the wrist, there's some scruff and around the neck as well. So it's not a bird, it's not a reptile, it's a mammal, it has fur. It has those canine teeth, which tells you it's a carnivore, it's not a rodent. And my guess, what we have is an incredibly rare raccoon. Or
really?
Maybe a dog.
It's a raccoon without hair?
What?
Well, it's been, you know, hey, listen, if I put you in the hot sun
you're probably right about,
you know,
that.
You wouldn't look
stick
pretty
me
good
out there in Long Island Sound for a couple of days. You're right. So the theories about maybe a turtle without a shell, you don't buy those?
Well, if it was a turtle without a shell, it would be looking just like that, because turtles without shells are dead because their spine are actually in the shell
itself. Point taken.
Oh.
But, yeah, so, no, it looks nothing like that. Remember I said, you know, everyone keeps going to the beak concept, but if you can see, that's what a beak looks like. If you go back to the other picture, you can clearly see that we're looking at teeth in its mouth.
Oh, see, we were dubious yesterday as to whether or not this was some sort of publicity stunt, but getting you on and having you examine it helps clear that up.
That's,
you believe it is real?
Like a dog. It does not look like a raccoon.
It says a raccoon.
I wish I had seen this before you guys were speculating, because something tells me I would have stuck it up with that awful Red Sox loss, but would have had about $500.
I got you.
It's just a fuzzy little bunny. Isn't that the line from Monty Python? Now, you've taken a look at the photograph. Do you see what Jeff Corwin's talking about? Do you think that it could just be the canine teeth of this decomposed carnivore?
Yeah, I mean, if it's not the teeth, I think it's definitely we're looking at bone where, you know, the way the skin has obviously decomposed around it, it's left it looking, as Jeff said, like a classic beak, like a dragon or something like that. And I think that's the way, the important thing is that's the way the eye is interpreting it. But, you know, if you look at the rest of the body, if you kind of ignore the head, it actually doesn't look anything weird at all. You know, it looks like a badly decomposing, something like a dog. You know, people have said a pit bull or something like that. So I think, you know, it's the mind's interpretation that he's making more of the facial structure than is actually there. Now, of course, you know, I hate to sound like a skeptic because I've dismissed that one and I've dismissed the Texas Chupacabra. And I'm actually not a skeptic. It's just that, unfortunately, I think, you know, in the last few weeks, we've had these two cases, which I'm sure are more conventional but weird-looking animals.
Right, and that's interesting, too, is that, you know, in the last few weeks, I mean, how strange is this? You know, people were saying it might be a viral marketing campaign for this new cryptid show, but you get the Manitowoc monster washing up, you get about a week and a half later, you get the El Chupacabra video from the Texas Ranger that videotaped it, and then within a few days of that is this Bigfoot sighting. And or Bigfoot body discovery, and it does start to sound a little hokey, don't you think, at this point?
Well, you know, I mean, some people have said that, but I mean, my view is, I don't actually agree with that personally, for the main reason that I think, you know, the police video, for example, there's no way I don't think at all that could be staged, you know, as part of a campaign. I think they legitimately filmed something, and because...
However, the one of the guys involved in the Bigfoot hoax is a cop that was on leave, so it's not like they can't be reached, and if they thought it was part of a marketing technique.
That's true. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm sure as time progresses, we're going to hear more on this. What I actually think is happening, though, is that right now, for reasons that aren't necessarily good reasons, cryptozoology is big news. So I think the media is following the subject. You know, for the most part, the media doesn't take that much interest, but because there have been these high-profile things and possibly a few others, that has led to coverage, and I think maybe that has in turn, you know, made people think, well, we've got this piece of film footage, let's put it out there, because the media is obviously taking an interest. So I think it's like one of these roll-on things where the media follows the stories, people think it's okay to talk or show what we've got because we're not going to be laughed at, so they put stuff out, the media reports on that, then more people come forward, and I think it could be something along those lines. But, you know, I'll be interested to see how it actually develops, you know, in terms of these theories about viral marketing and so on.
Well, I agree. I think time will tell a little bit more on this, and I hope that's not the case because, again, I think that's going to do a lot more damage to this field and the credibility of true investigation.
Yeah.
And I do want to make a mention for those of you listening. We're going to open up the phone lines in the third hour here. Nick will take your calls about cryptozoology, about the books that he's written, and the new book, There's Something in the Woods, which covers all of the different cryptids out there. And you can check out Nick's website again at nickredfern.com. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We're here with you every Saturday and Sunday night from 9 till midnight Central Time. We do hope that you'll check us out. And also check out our website at darknessradio.com. We'll archive all of our shows after they air so you can check them out on our website. We hope that you will stick with us here on the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We'll be back with the third hour and your calls. Thank you for tuning in, and stay tuned. We'll be back with more and your calls.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.